91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Former President Jimmy Carter's latest book, A Call to Action, is an impassioned account of the human rights abuses against women and girls around the world, particularly in religious societies. WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson talked with President Carter, who will be in town tonight for a sold-out book signing event at Joseph Beth Booksellers. Then later in the hour, we'll talk about your trees, lawns, and gardens. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. But first, Howard Wilkinson's interview with former President Jimmy Carter.
Mr. President, thanks for being with us today.
It's a great pleasure to be with you and all the folks around Cincinnati.
Well, you have written a book here, which is most interesting, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. And my understanding is that you were urged to write this by a group of religious leaders from all faiths around the world to talk about the oppression and discrimination against women in many cultures. Can you tell me why you decided to do this, and is this, in your mind, the greatest challenge that we face today?
It's the greatest unsolved crime that exists in the world today, because tens of millions of little baby girls are strangled by their parents at birth because they want a boy. And now with the advent of sonograms, they can tell that the fetus is going to be female, and they abort the little baby girl before it's born. That's just one of the things. Another thing is that there's genital mutilation in many countries in Africa, in particular, and a few other countries as well. There's honor killings where a family will kill their daughters if she's raped, for instance, or if she marries someone that they don't pick out for her. And in our country, it's really bad because Atlanta, for instance, where I happen to have this Carter Center, is the number one sexual trading post in America. And last year, the State Department of the United States estimated there were 100,000 girls sold into slavery inside the United States. And this is something that really is not very well known by people. We have almost flourishing prostitution throughout America in almost every city, I presume in Cincinnati too, because the city officials and the police don't want to stamp it out. They all know about it. There's no way to have a brothel on the street without the police on that beat knowing about it. But they either get bribed, or they have free sexual slavery, sexual favors, or because their chief of police and the mayor and city council says, "Well, let's don't rock the boat." So these are the kind of things that go on all over America. Two of the most revered institutions in America also have very serious sexual abuse. One is the military, and the other one is the university system. Every university in America has very serious sexual assaults on the campus, and they're very seldom reported because the college administrators, the presidents and the deans and so forth, don't want it to be known that on their college campuses there is increasing sexual abuse. And, of course, the boys know they can get away with it, so some of them become serial rapists. About half the rapes on a college campus are perpetrated by serial rapists who do it over and over again. So these are the kind of things that I describe in the book.
We often think about the abuse and the repression of women in terms of the third world and sometimes the Islamic countries. But as you've pointed out, this is our problem too. Do you see it being addressed in this country by the military, by the educational institutions?
Well, you know, last week the military, the U.S. Senate tried to pass a law that would remove the commanding officers from the ability to stop a rape charge. But the Senate voted it down, and so it wasn't even considered in the House. So commanding officers still have the authority to block a rape charge against a man who's accused of assaulting a woman. And this is something that, as I mentioned earlier, that also applies on university campuses. And in our country, in addition to what I just mentioned, the average woman in America gets 23% less pay for the same job than a man does. This is a 78th ranking in the whole world. The 77 other countries do better than us in paying women equal pay. And we have a very few number of women in public office at the local, state, and federal level. There we rank about 70 in the country, in the world, by the way. So we have a very poor record in America of dealing with sexual slavery, with abuse on college campuses and universities, with equal pay, and things of that kind.
You and Mrs. Carter, I know, you know, on behalf of the Carter Center, have traveled to, 145 countries?
Yes, about that.
Over the years.
Yes.
Do you see this in other countries as stemming from ancient religious beliefs, tradition, that kind of thing that has to be broken down or rethought?
Yeah, most of the time, it's distorted religious text. They take the Quran or they take the Bible, and the men twist the verses in the holy text to suit themselves and to give them a superior a position. But there's no doubt that that goes on.
And it goes on not just, worldwide, not particularly one religion or another.
No, it doesn't go on in one religion. In the Christian religion, where I teach every Sunday, Jesus Christ was the number one champion of female rights. He exalted women more than anyone else ever had in history, and maybe more than anyone ever has since then. But you can find verses in the Bible, in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, if you want to carefully select them, that lets you feel that the women ought to be inferior, that women ought not to serve in certain positions. In the churches and things of that kind.
Well, in the Christian belief too, that Jesus was some of his most faithful followers were women.
They were the most faithful followers, as you know, in his final days of attack and trial and crucifixion. They were the only ones that stuck with him. All of his disciples hid, and the women were the ones who were courageous, and they followed Christ all the way through his entire ministry. So whenever I get a problem with some verses in the Bible, I just go back and read what Jesus did and what he said, and I'm kind of reassured about it.
I know that some years ago you left your denomination, at least in part because of the way women were treated. Can you talk a little bit about that? And what?
Well, I was a Southern Baptist for about 70 years. My daddy was a... deacon and a Sunday school teacher before me. I was the same way. And in the year 2000, the Southern Baptist Convention voted in conference to change the status of women. And they denied, ever since then, a woman's right to be a pastor or a deacon or a chaplain in the military services. In fact, in some of the Southern Baptist Convention seminaries, they don't even let a woman teach a class if a boy is one of the students. So, you know, when the Southern Baptist Convention decided to do that, my wife and I decided that we would be better off in a different denomination. So we joined a very moderate Baptist church in Plains, Georgia, and that's where we still worship. And I teach the Bible every year, but we've had every week, but we've had women pastors and my wife is a deacon and so forth. So we treat women and men the same in our church.
In your book, you quote Nicholas Kristof, the columnist.
Yeah, he's a great man.
Yeah, who spent many years in China and talked about the status of women in China and said that in a lot of ways there is no country in the world that's made more progress in terms of equality for women. I think you agree with that up to a certain extent. Is that correct?
Yeah, up to a certain point. You know, when the Chinese Revolution took place and Mao Zedong prevailed, they had women fighting in the military. So when they passed new laws, they made the laws exactly equal between the status of men and status of women. And the laws are still that way. But, you know, China has also had a limit on feminist sizes. One is best, two is most. And now in China, and in other countries like India and so forth, if a family can only have one child and they have a girl, they strangle the girl so they can have a boy because they feel like in their old age that the boy will be better able to care for them with their Social Security and so forth. So that's what goes on in China, and they have a great shortage now of women in China. there are about 118 men in China for every 100 women. So that means a shortage of brides, and also, I guess, a shortage of prostitutes if you want to buy your sexual favors. And the same thing happens in South Korea, and it's even worse in India, by the way, where women are deprived of life because the families either are too poor to support two children or because the government puts a limit on the size of families.
Is there a reason to be hopeful that in this century, that here in this country and other places around the world, that these problems are going to be addressed?
Well, I think there's an arousing interest in it and an arousing concern about it, and I hope this book will be of help. I hope that every woman, for instance, would get a copy of the book and then, you know, join with us at the Carter Center in trying to correct these problems, and we can start with all the things that I've just described to you in this country. Obviously, on a global basis, the Carter Center, we meet every 3 years with some of the women heroes from different countries around the world, like Malaysia is a particular place, and in Senegal, where women activists and even cutters who used to remove the genitalia from girls are now changing their policies and encouraging women to insist on their own human rights. One of the problems is that nobody makes the women cut their little girls' genitalia. It's the husbands don't insist on it. It's not in the Quran anywhere. The mullahs don't want it. But the women who were circumcised when they were children, they feel that it's proper to do the same thing to their little children. So that's what makes it go on. And I think the education of women about you having an equal right, you don't have to do this to yourself or to your little daughters, is a very good educational program to carry out. But one of the things you can't do is have white people from the Carter Center or from the United States going into those villages and telling them, you are wrong, you need to change your way of life. You got to let them make the decision themselves.
Mr. President, I really appreciate you being with us today.
I've enjoyed talking to you. Best wishes to you.
Thank you, sir.
WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson talking with former President Jimmy Carter about his latest book, A Call to Action. In a moment, we'll talk about getting your lawn and garden ready for spring and summer. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.